702.
WhatsApp Profilwe.
On 072 702 1702.
So we are talking infertility and polycystic ovarian syndrome with our resident GP and founder and CEO rather of Proactive Health Solutions, Dr. Fundile Nyati. And I'll tell you why we are having this conversation today. The Fertility Show Africa takes place today on the 9th of October, as well as tomorrow. It's an online show that offers participants access to a wide range of leading specialists, experts, and clinics. And according to the Infertility Awareness Association of SA, one in six couples is impacted by infertility, with one of the most common causes of infertility in women being polycystic ovarian syndrome. So let's get as much information as possible around this condition, but most importantly, seek to understand why it affects so many women, and diagnosing, treating, and of course, overcoming this, and eventually getting to if your final goal or if your actual one of your goals in life is to become a parent, getting to that point. Dr. Fundile Nyati, good morning. A pleasure as always.
Good morning, Rasile, and good morning to the 702 listeners.
Yo, Dr. Nyati, I think as time goes on, matters of infertility, causes of infertility, and just conversations around infertility are becoming more and more widespread. So it's not, you know, the cause of shame that it quite often was for so many generations, but a call to action to find out what is going on with either my body or my partner's body, and, you know, causing us to look further into the happenings inside of our bodies. So if you could just give us a sense of the rate of infertility and the problems or the point at which most couples or most women tend to present at a doctor's to say, this is a problem for me, I'm not able to fall pregnant. Where are we in that spectrum of knowing what to look out for when it comes to fertility or infertility?
All right. No, thank you for the question. I think this association, Infertility Awareness Association of South Africa, is actually doing a great thing to actually make us talk about this problem. You know, we are generally a conservative country, South Africa, but maybe even the African continent in general. So when we talk about issues of reproductive health, including infertility, it becomes, you know, more like a taboo subject. Most people, you know, or most couples that are dealing with the problem of infertility, they find it difficult to talk about it or to even go and seek help about it because it's this relatively taboo subject.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in South Africa, like you mentioned earlier, at least one in six couples do have a problem of infertility. Now, when we say a problem of infertility, what exactly are we talking about? What we're talking about here is that this couple, they are not able to get pregnant despite having frequent unprotected sexual intercourse for at least a year.
Mm-hmm.
So you must have tried as a couple for at least a year without any form of protection, having regular sexual intercourse, but still you're not able to fall pregnant. If you fall into that category, then we say you have a problem of infertility.
Sure.
And so that is the problem where at least one in six couples in South Africa, you know, they are unable to fall pregnant. So it is a relatively common problem. And the bad thing about it is that in most of our communities, whenever there's a problem of infertility, the blame is always put on women.
Sure.
You know, there's this assumption that, you know, the reason for infertility is because the woman is unable to fall pregnant because the problem is primarily with the woman. Yet we know that at least about a third of the reasons for infertility, you know, in a couple is actually male-related, you know, or a combination of male and female, you know, related kind of problems.
Combined,
and so a lot of women are abused in society or in families or even by the husbands, you know, and they insist, I'm going to take another wife. because you are not able to fall pregnant. Yet he doesn't even know that he may be the reason for the infertility.
Yeah. So, I mean, a very important part of the conversation around infertility, right? A reminder that, by the way, men also contribute to this unfortunate challenge. And by contribute, I don't mean it's intentional. It's not intentional for anybody, but that's how it happens. So it's important for both partners to go ahead and see a medical doctor or a fertility specialist and to have the requisite tests done. We know that there's also a global decline, or they call it a male infertility crisis, where it has been tracked, and it's a trend globally that, you know, men are experiencing declining sperm counts for all sorts of reasons, health, lifestyle, nutrition, etc., and environment, exactly. So that's not something that can be discounted. But our conversation today, Dr. Nyathi, is also focusing on PCOS, on polycystic ovarian syndrome, and how that affects women. And it doesn't necessarily, and when we talk PCOS, it's not something that's just, you know, lives in the realm of my partner and I have been trying for a year now and I can't fall pregnant. It also is a painful and difficult condition to live with outside of, you know, the fertility issues that it causes. So just explain what PCOS is for us, please.
Well, PCOS, which is an acronym, is polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Sure.
Which is really a syndrome, it's a syndrome which is more described as a hormonal disorder that's actually relatively common amongst women of reproductive age. Here you have a situation where the factory of the eggs, you know, which is the ovaries, that are supposed to produce, a mature egg every month, is actually, damaged, in the sense that there's a lot of cysts that develop, within the ovary, that hence the name polycystic. Those cysts, they continue to grow within the ovary, and they may actually suppress the normal ovarian tissue that is responsible for the production of the eggs.
Yeah.
So you may then find that those people may present with a number of problems, amongst those being infertility. But because it's a hormonal problem, they also have other issues that they present with. But the common thing that they present with is infrequent or prolonged menstrual periods. Sometimes they produce a lot of the male hormones, and so that is the problem. They are unable to produce the eggs because of these many cysts, or unable to produce the relevant hormones, and this may also go hand in hand with other problems, where they may have, type 2 diabetes. They may also have problems with heart disease, weight problems. So those are just some of the problems.
Sure.
So it is a relative, they say about 8 to 13% of women who have got infertility problems is actually as a result of polycystic ovarian syndrome. But the actual cause, we do not know.
At
this point, we don't know the cause. But it can start as early as age 14, 15, if it is not diagnosed early, those cysts can continue and cause more damage to the normal tissue. So the earlier it is diagnosed, the better it is.
Sure.
Dr.
Nyathi, and we'll get back to, being able to access infertility investigations and treatment via medical aids and your medical schemes. But just staying on polycystic ovarian syndrome for now, I think a big worry and a big issue around the diagnosing of reproductive illnesses when it comes to women is often that they go undetected for a long time. So, You know, we know various people who, despite the fact that they've got that sudden, weight gain or weight change, they've got, for instance, those irregular missed periods. They might even have severe acne. And by acne, when I think of PCOS acne, it's boils on the face. These huge things that are hard to miss.
They're producing excess male hormones.
Yeah. And all those symptoms that come to bear. And you wonder why it takes so long for medical, for doctors or, medical practitioners to diagnose so many women with PCOS. What tends to be the issue there? Because unlike other conditions, it's not necessarily an underground or, a stealth kind of operating in stealth mode. Mm.
Well, I think, the issue of awareness, because obviously we get taught this at medical school, we know about it, but that we know about it does not necessarily mean that it's at top of mind when somebody is presenting. So somebody may present with a problem of acne, and we just deal with the acne without actually investigating what could be the broader picture. Or somebody else may present with the issue of diabetes and not deal with another issue. So I think the high index of suspicion, amongst the frontline doctors, to say this is no ordinary acne, this is no ordinary diabetes, taking proper sexual or reproductive history, doctors at GP level don't have time to take proper history. Sometimes they then miss these things. So I'm glad there is this awareness, weekend, about this condition, because then it says even to frontline nurses and doctors, keep this top of mind when you have somebody of a reproductive age who's a woman, who actually is presenting with this and that, because that will then help many women to be referred simultaneously to the relevant, professional resources here, gynecologists, and even within gynecologists, the ones who have got a special interest in this space.
Sure, absolutely. So what are the treatment options available with regards to infertility? In fact, let's start with the question about whether or not medical schemes pay for the infertility investigations and treatment. I guess a lot depends on the kind of package package that you have, that you're paying for, you've taken out with your medical aid. But do medical schemes generally assist when it comes to infertility matters?
This is one area where medical aids have got, I would say ambivalence, about it, how to fund or finance this. They may, support the investigations, some of the investigations, but others they may exclude unless, somebody writes to their ex gratia committee, for that, payment to be approved. So some, depending on the, option that you've chosen or the type of medical aid or, that you have chosen, they may not pay for everything. Certainly for the treatment, it becomes a problem. In most instances, as a couple, you have to fund that on your own.
Mm.
They may pay for the investigations, but the treatment options, they often, limit what they can do in terms of payment.
Yeah, it can be quite a burden, and it poses all sorts of questions about, how we view medical treatment and, of course, your ability to access, treatment that could make sure that you become a parent, right? So much of that contributes to your mental health, emotional well-being, the health of the couple, the relationship. Anyway, we could go on. In terms of treatments available, what are they, Dr. Nyati? We often think of IVF, for instance, or IUI. What else is available? And explain the two I've just mentioned, please.
Yeah. Well, treatments obviously depend on what the underlying cause that has been identified. If it's an ovulation problem, then, there could be treatments for that. If it's a problem with the uterus or the cervix, there could be a solution. If it's endometriosis, there could be a solution. But let's talk about what you just, highlighted now, that, for females, The issue of IVF, which falls under what we refer to as assisted reproductive technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So IVF, basically, the egg and the sperm are fertilized in the lab.
Sure.
And once an embryo has been formed, then that embryo is artificially inserted, into the womb of the woman. And that way, then that womb, then which has already been prepared with hormones, is then able to carry that embryo to become, a full-term baby.
Sure.
All right, but there's a number of techniques that are used, for that. But in some instances, you might find that the woman in the couple is unable to carry with their uterus, in which case one has to think of other options like, what they call gestational carriers, that is asking somebody else to actually carry, the baby for the couple.
Sure.
But there are other, options that are considered. But it's now a big area, a growing area, this area of, assisted reproductive technologies. And so when people are unable to have, a baby, there are options, including, considering,
sure,
having a gestational carrier.
We've got a WhatsApp message asking, Dr. Nyati, I'd like to hear your views on uterine fibroid embolization, especially complications, if you've dealt with those in your practice. When is fibroid embolization a necessary treatment?
Well, what you're talking about here is that, sometimes you may have these growths of the muscle of the uterus, isolated growth, and those are called fibroids. So at times, depending on the size and other issues, the gynae may actually decide that, we may need to just kill the blood supply to that particular fibroid that is big, that is causing the problem, so that, as that fibroid shrinks because it doesn't get blood supply,
mm-hmm,
it then allows the uterus to be able, to carry, a pregnancy. But it is a specialized kind of intervention that must be done by people who really have a specific interest, mm-hmm, and experience in doing that. But it is definitely one of the solutions.
Complications?
For people with pregnancy. Obviously, being an operation, there may be complications around that, and some of the complications could be that there could be bleeding, excessive bleeding, there could be infections, so like all operations, it's always important to worry about that, infections following the procedure, or even, bleeding.
All right. Dr. Nyati, we're going to have to leave it right there this morning. But I think when it comes to infertility and the various causes thereof, we need a series on this, right? A series of conversations on this. So I think we'll start doing that for the remainder of the year, just peppering them throughout the weeks. Really appreciate your time this morning. And of course, we're talking infertility.